The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
With Randy Corcoran on News Talk 710 KNUS.
We are back for the final hour of the show. Time flies when you're having fun, and we've got a lot to do this hour. We'll be joined by Lauren Boebert here in just a little bit, the primary candidate taking on a congressman from Colorado, House Representative Scott Tipton. And, is this a year, 2020, with President, House majorities, Senate majorities so crucial to the second term of President Donald Trump to be even having a primary challenge? That will be an interesting conversation. And then, man, oh, man, Matt Gaetz, perhaps the most effective and most impactful when he actually dragged cameras down and showed what was going on in the basement of the Capitol. He turned impeachment on its ear and put Pelosi and Schiff and everybody else on the defensive from that day forward. Representative Congressman from Florida, Matt Gaetz, voted with Nancy Pelosi on the War Powers Resolution to restrict Trump's power when it comes to Iran. It's insignificant. It's meaningless. It won't pass. Trump wouldn't sign it. It's a resolution anyway. It's not a new law. But Matt Gaetz voted with Nancy Pelosi. And boy, has he taken a lot of flack for that. So we've got a lot of audio from Representative Gaetz where he explains his position, makes a lot of sense. And I look forward to sharing that with you. But let's go ahead and wrap up our time with my good friend, Rob Nadelson. Now, I have heard very interesting and seemingly well-supported views of what actually goes on in the Senate. You describe it as more of a judicial process. As I recall, I've heard others describe it more of as a political process and that it was designed to be. So let's dig into that a little bit. Tell folks exactly what will happen if the House managers show up and this thing proceeds and they present their case. And then during the reading of statements, the offering of air quotes here, evidence to the Senate, what is the role of the Supreme Court, the Chief Justice who is presiding, and how do the Senate's senators interact with the presentation of testimony?
It's a good package of questions. Let me deal with it as best I can. It was, in fact, designed to be a judicial process, Randy, rather than primarily a political process. In fact, the founders seriously considered having the Supreme Court try convictions instead of the Senate. They ultimately decided on the Senate in following the precedent of the British House of Lords. The British House of Lords have been trying impeachments for some time, about several centuries, and they generally adopted a very judicial and professional posture in doing that. The senators serve as jurors. They each take a special oath to do impartial justice. During the hearing, they have to shut up. There are not going to be any speeches. They are jurymen. They're not politicians at this point. If they have questions, they're supposed to write them down and present them to the presiding officer. As you mentioned, the presiding officer is the Chief Justice of the United States. That highlights the judicial nature of the process. That means he can exclude evidence for being hearsay or otherwise unreliable. That's one of the problems that the House of Representatives has because they rushed to their judgment. They didn't do this properly. They've got a lot of evidence that suffers from defects, is likely to be dismissed or disregarded. The final vote has to be by a two-thirds vote of senators. That also is a way of protecting the integrity of the process. Unlike the Schiff show in the House of Representatives. Both parties get lawyers. They get both parties get an opportunity to cross-examine, call witnesses, and so forth, and argue their case. So this is by constitutional design and by precedent is a proceeding in which due process is observed. So it's very different from the circus we saw in the House committees.
You mentioned two-thirds vote to convict, very, very high standard, and that's a good thing. What is the evidentiary standard under
Great
which
question.
They have to consider the evidence that's presented?
The evidentiary standard is clear and convincing evidence. Just to clarify for folks who may not be familiar with that, the very lowest standard used by courts is something called fair preponderance of the evidence. It basically means my evidence is slightly better than your evidence. And then you're probably familiar with the burden of proof beyond a reasonable doubt. Well, one in between that is clear and convincing evidence, and that's not an easy standard to meet. The evidence not only has to be better than what the other guy has, it's got to be pretty hard to dispute. And that's a burden that the House managers are going to have to overcome. Not just that they have better evidence than the president has, but decisively better than the president has. If they don't meet that burden, the case is lost. The president is acquitted.
I try and explain it this way. You know, everybody who watches TV and the cop shows, the court dramas, they know that a criminal defendant walks into court with the cloaked in the presumption of innocence, and the prosecutor has to prove their guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, or sometimes you hear beyond all reasonable doubt. In a civil case, nobody's presumed to be anything. You mentioned preponderance. That's kind of like 50.01% better your
That's
right. evidence is than the other side. Clear and convincing is as high as of a standard as there is in civil, and it's probably just about beyond a reasonable doubt, except nobody walks in with a presumption of innocence or guilt one way or the other. Is that a fair way to assess it?
Well, that's one way to think about it. I think that's accurate. Here's another way of thinking about it. With if you've got the burden of proof, but the burden of proof is only fair preponderance, it's like walking up a 50 or 1% grade. I mean, you'd hardly notice it. To establish proof beyond a reasonable doubt, you might have to walk up a 90% grade. Really, really tough. I mean, you're crawling up on technical equipment, scaling a mountainside or a cliff. Proof by clear and convincing evidence, maybe you've got to walk up a 67% grade. Maybe you might not need technical equipment, but you better be in really good shape because that's one tough climb.
You talked about the role of the senators. They can submit questions to the Chief Justice who's presiding. The Chief Justice can make rulings. And for procedural matters, for the rules of the Senate, it's only a majority. Of course, Republicans have that majority, 51 senators required. Can 51 senators during the course of the trial overrule the Chief Justice and his rulings on evidence or anything else?
Yes. All the decisions are made by a bare majority except the vote on conviction. That having been said, Randy, the optics of overruling the Chief Justice are really bad. Put another way, if the Chief Justice, who is widely presumed to be pretty impartial, if anything, many conservatives have accused him of selling out to the left, if he makes a well-considered ruling for 51 politicians to overrule that, not going to look really good. So I think you'd have to have a pretty egregious case as a practical matter for them to overturn that.
In the last couple of minutes we have with Rob Nadelson, let's assume, and I don't think anybody believes this is possible, especially the Democrats, or the articles would have already been delivered, but if there were an impeachment, if a president was actually impeached, two-thirds vote of the Senate, is there any recourse at that point? Is there an appeal of an impeachment?
I think you mean there already has been impeachment for what
yeah,
you
yes,
mean
a removal.
Convicted.
I'm sorry, a removal.
Yeah,
yes,
right.
Thank you.
Almost certainly there is no recourse. the courts have indicated that this is essentially a process in which they cannot intervene. I'm not sure that's an absolute immutable rule, but I think so long as there's a trial or an appearance of trial with a two-thirds conviction, I think the chance of the courts intervening with that and overturning the Senate in any way is close to nil.
So if a president gets tossed, there is no recourse. Now, in a criminal case, there's this thing called double jeopardy. If you are tried and acquitted, you can't be tried again for the same crimes. There is no such bar to Nancy Pelosi and the Democrat-controlled House of Representatives continuing to conduct impeachment hearings and try and build on their case and try and impeach him again and again, is there?
Right. Impeachment is not a criminal proceeding. And if the president is impeached, if there's criminal conduct involved, the president can be prosecuted for that criminal conduct. Of course, in this case, no criminal conduct is alleged, which may be unprecedented in impeachments. You actually don't need criminal conduct, but almost always criminal conduct is alleged. So I don't think the president would have fear of being prosecuted criminally after being removed, although I suppose that's a possibility if somebody gins up some additional evidence against him.
And of course, I'm sure you agree with me, and nobody believes that there is a two-thirds vote in the Senate to remove this president.
No, I don't think there's a two-thirds vote to remove. I tend to accept your view that one of the reasons why Speaker Pelosi is stalling, just one of the reasons, is in the hope that additional evidence surfaces.
Sure.
But thus far, I don't see it.
It really has been a mess. Well, Rob, I want to encourage folks who want to really be the cool kid at their Tea Party meeting or at their constitutional conservative gathering to go back and find the original Constitution, what it actually said and meant. Even, you know, as a law student, you don't learn a whole lot about the Constitution in law school.
That's
true. You learn what the Supreme Court has said about the Constitution. And your book does a great job of kind of regrounding folks. You certainly don't need a law school education to appreciate it or enjoy it. In the last couple seconds we have, Rob, and for people who weren't with us when we started the show, I just want them to hear this.
So, Robert, my first question is this. Why did the House not call you as a witness during impeachment since you actually know what it's about?
Well, first, Deborah, I have to say, it is a kick to be on with you.
Great.
I'd actually rather be on with you than Randy anyway, you know.
Oh, hey.
And Rob Nadelson, I just want you to know that I never, ever forget.
Well, you'll never forget, but I hope you forgive.
I do, brother. Hey, thanks so much. I didn't plan to keep you an entire hour. It was terrific. Let's do this periodically throughout the year, especially as things proceed on this impeachment thing. And there's just so much we can dig into with your wealth of knowledge, and it's been a lot of fun. I hope you enjoyed it as well.
I did enjoy it. Thank you so much, Randy.
All right. Very good. And, man, I'll tell you, the time flies at 11:15. We've got about 5 minutes till the break. We can push that a little bit. So I think we'll jump right to our next guest. But don't forget, this will be a topic of inquiry with Lauren Boebert as well. We'll be playing some audio from Congressman from Florida, Matt Gaetz, explaining why he voted with Nancy Pelosi on the War Powers Resolution. But right now, she's up in the mountains. We've got to get a clear signal. And we've got one, I think, so proud to welcome in the anti-Beto O'Rourke powerhouse, Lauren Boebert, now running for Congress, challenging incumbent Scott Tipton. Lauren, good morning.
Good morning, Randy.
It was so good to run into you at the rally.
Wasn't that great?
Yeah, no, it was fantastic. There's another rally on the west steps of the Capitol. I know you're gone now, but we're fighting for life in the womb. That's at 1 o'clock, mm-hmm. followed by a march today. And so I just want to keep reminding.
I'm circulating that petition. So yeah, get people down
good.
There.
Good. Yeah, we're doing the best we can. And one of these days, maybe we can get you, when you're going to be down in time, we'll get you over for our Arapaho Tea Party meeting. We've got the largest Tea Party group in the state, and we meet coming up this Tuesday and the second Tuesday of every month, 6:30 to 8:30 at the South Metro Fire Rescue Building. So, you know, you and I stay in touch enough, we can work schedules out and maybe make that happen as well. But so great to get you now.
I would love to be there.
Obviously, you came to prominence with your coming all the way from the Western Slope to stand at a Beto O'Rourke rally in Aurora, Colorado, after on the presidential debate stage he had said he was coming for our guns. You showed up packing heat and said, oh, hell no, you aren't. And
right.
Were you thinking about making a run for Congress before that event, or did the events just all come together and motivate you to say, you know what, I've got to take advantage of this opportunity, and I feel a real strong need to challenge this incumbent, Scott Tipton?
Yeah, there was definitely a lot of motivating factors. I had no intention to run for any office when I went down and got in Beto's face. Really, that is just an extension of what I've been doing for nearly 7 years. I have been advocating not only for the Second Amendment, which to me is the greatest because it defends all of our other rights and secures it, unlike some of our elected officials. But I've been advocating for freedom. And so that was just an extension of what I was already doing. And last year in Colorado, we had such a vicious legislative cycle that so many more Coloradans became engaged in their communities on what they can do to combat some of this legislation, undo some of it, give voice to some of it. Like, for instance, National Popular Vote was a big one. And I circulated the petition so we in Colorado could get our voice back to elect the president of the United States. And I worked my butt off on that, and I became the second most signature gatherer for that petition. And, you know, during that process, I was roughly in the face of 30,000 people last year talking about what's going on in Colorado and in our country and really across the world. And so there's just a lot of people who are needing hope and needing something to look towards. And all of that just added up to, I need to run. And Congress is where I landed. If I felt that our current congressman was doing a good job at representing us, I would not feel the need to run. But, you know, we have people like AOC and the Squad and the rest of these left-wing lunatics who are going unchallenged. And conservatives want a fighter who will put these people back in their place and stand up for what we believe in. And I think Beto is just one of the things that shows that I am pretty darn good at that.
Boy, no doubt about that. I encourage everybody to Google your name and watch that video. It's 2 minutes of pure pleasure.
And we have it on the website at laurenforcolorado.com.
Excellent, excellent. And Lauren is L-A-U-R-E-N, and L-A-U-R-E-N in this case, Lauren, for F-O-R or number four?
Yes. F-O-R.
Okay.
You know, or you could keep it simple. We could go to keepourguns.com.
Very good. Those are great, easy-to-remember names. So, you know, obviously you're challenging the congressman in the district where you live. What is it about Scott Tipton that brought him in your sights?
Oh, man. Well, ultimately, you know, during all of these petitions, during COVID, we had the Right to Life petition, we had the Citizens Vote petition, we had the We attempted to recall our governor for the first time in Colorado history. And all of this, National Popular Vote, I was reaching out to me and many, many, many others. We're reaching out to our elected officials, asking for help, asking for notoriety, somebody get behind us and say, hey, look what my constituents are doing to make sure the rights of the people are secure. And the only response that I received was, we're focused on 2020 elections. And so I said, darn, maybe I should get focused on 2020 elections. And so that's what I'm doing. Now I'm running for Congress. And, you know, our current congressman, he was elected to get our national debt under control. I mean, we have nearly $23 trillion in debt. And, you know, he just signed another big spending bill, you know, voted yes, $1.4 trillion. I don't think he even read through it. And, you know, that's one of the things that he said that he wanted to do. He wanted to bring common sense from Colorado to D.C. when it comes to spending. And he doesn't really vote no on any of these spending increases. You know, we also, he told us that he was going to fire Nancy Pelosi.
Lauren, I'm
and repealing
Lauren,
Obamacare.
Can you hear me okay? We're having a horrible time with with our connection with you. And
I had some good things to say.
I know you do. And but you know what? We can have you on often. And maybe you were in a better spot when we had you scheduled at 11, and I hated that we had to bump you. But
yeah,
I want to encourage
okay.
Of course, now it sounds fine. I want to encourage everybody to go to Lauren, L-A-U-R-E-N, Lauren for Colorado. LaurenForColorado.com. See the Beto tape. See more about what she's about. Can people see the letter that you wrote to Scott Tipton when he voted with Nancy Pelosi to give amnesty
yes.
to farm workers and their families?
Yes, that is there. He voted to give millions of illegal immigrants amnesty, and not only that, but give them $1 billion in taxpayer subsidies, our hard-earned taxpayer dollars, to pay for their housing. And yes, that letter is on there. And you know, this is a grassroots campaign. I need all the support I could get. I need support, and I need votes, and I need donations at laurenforcolorado.com.
And I would suffice it to say, I don't know this for sure, your picture on the very top of your website, laurenforcolorado.com, you are probably the only person, and certainly the only woman running for Congress. And your introductory picture has your pistol strapped to your thigh. You are definitely going to make an impression. And
no one will ever have to question my stance on the Second Amendment.
You know we'll have you back. Sorry for the kind of the scheduling snafu today. Again, was really great to see you this week. Always let me know when you're in, nearby, and we'll get you in studio maybe again sometime real soon.
I would love to be in studio with you, Randy. I'll make a special trip just for that.
All right. Thank you, Lauren.
Thank you. And thank you to your listeners.
Better believe it. LaurenForColorado.com. Check it out. Very, very interesting. And it all fits into the conversation that, we have all the time, including in and around Cory Gardner. This particular year, 2020, when incumbency helps ensure reelection, and we're fighting to hang on to the U.S. Senate and have to take back control of the House, or else we'll have four more years of Trump impeachment. Does it make sense to be challenging an incumbent? If we'd have had a better signal with Lauren, we'd have dug down into some of those ideas, and I think you'd love her positions, and I think you just have to assess every one of these candidacies individually. But check her out, and if you like what you see, definitely send a little love her way. Primaries are also very good in getting the incumbents to remember that we're out here. You know, Cory Gardner didn't come on my show for 1,500 days, and we pushed and we prodded. He's been on several times now. He made this great pro-Trump, pro-Iran policy speech on the House floor, which we played in full at the beginning of the show or in the first hour. And everything's always moving. We've got to make individual decisions. We have to be willing to reassess as we move forward. That's how wars are run. Battle plans change. And when we come back, I think you'll find it fascinating to hear Congressman Matt Gaetz as he talks about his reason after being perhaps and continuing to be one of the greatest advocates for President Trump in America, why he voted with Nancy Pelosi on her war powers resolution. So we'll get into that on the other side at 11:24. It's Randy Corporan. Wake up with Randy Corporan here at 710 KNUS.
Now back to Wake Up with Randy Corporan on News Talk 710 KNUS.
Little Rush tribute throughout the show this morning. Thanks to the Whippersnapper for getting that all together for us. Rush drummer Neil Peart, dead at 67. Turned 60 last year, man, oh man. So does make you think. Make every moment count. Hey, my apologies to callers today. We've got a line open now. We've got a half hour left in the show. We'll get to as many calls as we can. I'm only going to play about 6 or 7 minutes in little bites of Congressman Matt Gaetz. And really wanted to get some quality time in with Rob Nadelson and everything else that we did. But if you want to get on now, one line's open at 303-696-1971. After all of the events in Iran, the Ukrainian plane down, the mobilization of our military, the quick response to the attack on our embassy, Donald Trump's amazing, probably election-winning Brandenburg Gate speech, where he opened by saying, so long as I'm president of the United States, Iran will never have a nuclear weapon. Then he said good morning and started into his speech. In light of all of that, of course, Democrats and never-Trumper Republicans scrambled. We've got to stop this president. He's out of control. He's impulsive. And Nancy Pelosi, another political, meaningless but political ploy, has a majority in the House, so knew that she was going to easily be able to pass her war powers resolution, claiming the intention of the Congress to want to limit the president's ability to attack Iran. And we're not going to have time in this half hour to debate the proper authority, you know, congressionally. Congress can declare war. We've been in an undeclared war for so long. Whether we should be in Afghanistan or other places right now, keeping an eye on our enemies, keeping ISIS out, keeping Al-Qaeda down, watching for suitcase bombs, dirty bombs, showing our strength in the Middle East to keep our enemies at bay. We're not going to have time for all of those debates. Plan to do a much more in-depth conversation about all that, probably in 2 weeks, right here on Wake Up with Randy Corporan. But Matt Gaetz, the most, really, the best spokesperson for Donald Trump, especially on impeachment, has become friends with the president, spends time with the president, joined Nancy Pelosi in voting for this war powers resolution. And boy, did it generate a lot of activity on TV, social media, and elsewhere. Dinesh D'Souza wrote, given the Democrats' tactical purpose in introducing the Iran vote, meaning the war powers resolution, it was a blunder on Rep. Matt Gaetz's part to go along with it. This wasn't a vote on principle. It was an anti-Trump statement. Gaetz got suckered, but he's not a sellout. He just needs to think harder the next time. And I responded to Dinesh, who I know, and I said I disagree. That led to some other Twitter action, and a Twitter follower of mine said, sorry, Matt screwed up. Any symbolic vote with the Democrat socialists who were defending the terrorists and Iran at the time of the vote was horrible. The Democrats only pushed their agenda. Reaching across the aisle is just stupid. Matt, you were duped. Nancy is laughing at you. Well, Matt Gaetz was on with Steve Bannon on War Room Impeachment and had a lengthy chunk of time to explain his thought process, his decision making, and how it actually helps the president in re-election. And really is aligned with the president and his anti-war, anti-adventures in the Middle East position that he campaigned on and ran on. And so first, Matt Gaetz was asked about how he would describe what Trump did in Iran.
I believe the Trump doctrine works at its best when we kill the terrorists and come home, and we do not engage in endless forever wars in the Middle East. And I think that, you know, when you look at some of the folks, particularly in the Senate, who are critical of the resolution, it's some of the same folks who were the biggest champions of a lot of these interventionist regime change wars. I am not one who believes that we need another generation of these quagmires. And I also think that we politically cannot allow Nancy Pelosi to cast Donald Trump as the pro-war candidate.
Yeah, and boy, he really elaborates on that in some of the later answers he gives, which we'll get to in just a minute. But Representative Matt Gaetz was asked, you know, why does he look at the Middle East and what's going on and actually signing on with Nancy Pelosi on the war powers resolution? What motivates his perspective on all that?
I buried one of my constituents yesterday, Sergeant Gobble, who went to Afghanistan. He was on his ninth deployment and died as a hero, as a patriot. And just buried a lot of my constituents during my time in the Congress. I don't believe that these protracted engagements that are unfocused, unconstitutional, that have bled away $6 trillion, more than the market cap of Facebook, Google, Amazon, and Apple combined, I don't think that that really is best for our country. You know, you talk about the politics of it. I get sick and tired of people in this town acting like toughness is engaging in conflict in the Middle East. I think.
And, you know, just think about it. Think about what Donald Trump ran on. The clips that we played from his introductory speech when he was announcing his intention to run for president when it comes to the Middle East. He was very critical of George Bush. Of course, we've been at war forever over there, and generations of Americans will not know their fathers or their mothers, or will, you know, their fathers and mothers are now seriously injured. And if it's a mental injury, then even whether or not they're physically damaged, they're not there. And so it changes the course of thousands and thousands of American families' lives. And Donald Trump ran as the get out of the Middle East anti-war president. Congressman Matt Gaetz elaborated on what he views as the Trump doctrine.
You're right that the Trump movement is an anti-war movement. I mean, it really is. I mean, and that's not to say we don't defend ourselves. I think there's a key distinction there. You know, in the resolution that I voted for yesterday, there was a robust articulation of self-defense, even if we had to take a preemptive action to protect our troops. But there is a difference between action and defense of our troops and our allies and a protracted forever war in the Middle East.
Matt. To callers, we're going to get to the phone here in just a minute. We'll get at least one call in before the break and finish them up on the other side. But I want everybody to hear how Representative Matt Gaetz responded when he was asked, how can you support the drone strike, which, of course, Trump supporters, you, I, and Matt Gaetz clearly do, and yet have signed on to this Nancy Pelosi War Powers Resolution?
We're not going to war with Iran, and that's because Iran doesn't want to go to war. President Trump doesn't want to go to war. The American people don't want to go to war. The biggest animating factor drawing our countries into a war we didn't want was General Soleimani. He was doing everything he could to draw our nation into war, and killing him was the right thing to do for that reason. There was one reference to Soleimani in the resolution that was initially filed on war powers. And so I went to the Democrats and said, if this resolution includes any criticism of the Soleimani killing, if it includes any criticism of President Trump or his policies, I'm not voting for it because I'm not in for just a vehicle to go and smash the president. But if the resolution instead articulates our robust rationale for self-defense, and if it lays out that on a going forward basis, no president can drag our country into a Middle East war in the absence of approval of Congress, then I'll vote for it. And my Democrat colleagues took my amendment, removed any criticism from the president, and I thought that was a win. I thought that was a win for the president because I do believe, from a messaging standpoint, it is important for the president to see the people who care about him and love him and fight for his agenda every day continue to animate the populist anti-war sentiment that undergirds our movement. And I think there's never a bad time to do that. And for all the Republicans who are saying, well, Matt, I agree with you, but I mean, come on. I mean, is this really the right time to be doing this? Look, we have been at war my entire adult life in undeclared, unconstitutional wars. And so I think it's always a good time to reassert the role of the Congress and to do so in a way that does not criticize the president, but that reinforces what I know are his values and his instincts.
Now, does that help change your view if you, like me, initially reacted to Matt Gaetz saying, my God, what in the world is that man doing? We will finish his comments, his elaboration, why what he did signing on with Nancy Pelosi supported President Trump in the long term and supported his reelection. We've got time for all of that audio on the other side. But I did promise we'd get to a call, and my old friend Father Hugh is standing by. Father Hugh, good morning. Thanks for waiting. I appreciate it.
Morning. I'll make it snappy. Three or four little things. First of all, a bouquet to you for your terrific response. What was it to the Post? What eventually?
Oh, yeah. Colorado Times recorder. I got notified in Google. I was there. So.
And second point, for Nadelson, I loved it. And I thought to myself, it's so refreshing, you know, after all of the BS that we've heard about the Constitution, the stupid comments, it's great to hear someone who has a reasoned position and pays attention to the words.
And was opposed to Trump. So clearly, you know, he's not just making political determinations.
It's, whoa, a man of principle.
Exactly.
And actually, I'd mention one thing, a bouquet to Nadelson. I subscribe to the Epoch Times.
Yep.
I pronounce it that way to, you know, just to make it clear that it's not like an epic poem. And in the very last issue, this week's issue, there's a wonderful article by Rob on the Mayflower Compact, which was the first place where the colonists asserted the right to self-govern. And actually, forgive me for doing this, a personal thing. I grew up 20 miles from Plymouth. And we, on a Sunday afternoon in the years when you'd go for a Sunday ride, we'd go down for an ice cream cone in Plymouth and we'd go look at the rock. And you just absorb that. And then the other part in the Nadelson article, he reproduces the signature page of the Mayflower Compact, and two of the people were Bradfords. That was a classmate of mine in college.
Oh, that's great.
Whatever. It's, anyway, that's
yeah.
The other
fantastic.
People, Lauren, last name, please.
Boebert, B-O-E-B-E-R-2. P-E-R-T.
B-O-E-B-E-R-T.
Yeah.
And the website.
Is Lauren4Congress.com. Lauren is L-A-U-R-E and Lauren4Congress.com.
Oh, okay. Terrific. Okay, thanks.
And we'll put that in the podcast, a link up to it, tweet it out, tweet out the interview with her as well. I know you're not on Twitter, Hugh, but I know you've got a computer, and I know you know how to turn it on, so you can get a hold of her very easily.
Only hey, one step after two tin cans and a string.
That's right. Hey, thanks for waiting. We've been horrible to callers today, but when I saw your name, I wanted to make sure we got you in. Have a great weekend, sir, and thanks very much for listening to the show. All right, then. 18 minutes to go until 12 o'clock. We do have time for all of the remaining Gates sound that I put together for you. Already getting texts in about Representative Gates. Based on what Rep. Gates said about the resolution, Trump admin would have missed the target if they had to delay decision. I don't think people understand that that's not what even the War Resolution Act means. It means you can't launch another war. You can't launch an endless war like we seem to have done in Afghanistan ever again, any president. It would not prevent. And Gates made sure, he explained that in the last comment that we played, that any negative spin on what Trump did was removed. And it would not stop Trump from taking defensive or offensively defensive short-term acts like taking out the Iranian terrorist as he did last week. So when you dig down into the granular details, sometimes you get a different perspective. We'll try and squeeze in all of the Matt Gaetz remaining audio that we have so you can hear what he had to say. When we finish up, Wake Up with Randy Corporan on 710 KNUS.
We now return to Wake Up with Randy Corporan on News Talk 710 KNUS.
Our last little taste of Rush today. Tribute to drummer Neil Peart. Died at 67. Which, now that I've hit 60, is a real attention getter. I'll tell you. Hey, once again, before I run out of time, I really do apologize to callers today for not getting you on. Just had so much going on. Sly writes in on Facebook, for us on the East Coast, Wake Up with Randy Corporan has become Do Lunch with Randy Corporan. I just want to say, when my wife told me that was going to be the name of our show 5 years ago when I was doing daily morning radio, we figured no matter what time slot it was heard or played or if I was filling in or got different hours at another time, that Wake Up still fits, because the point is to get people paying attention, get people activated, get people motivated. I'm always telling you about things that are going on. Our Arapaho Tea Party meeting coming up Tuesday at 6:30, our monthly meeting. Largest Tea Party group in the state. I'm the chairman. We're always packed and busy. And I appreciate everybody who takes the time to come out on a Tuesday. If you need details, send me an email, 710knus.com, Wake Up with Randy Corporan, big red button, email the show. And then when I leave here, I'll be running down to downtown Denver for the pro-life rally at 1. There'll be a march for life at 2. And it's colder out today, 40s by the time the thing starts, but a beautiful sunny day in Colorado. I hope you can swing by and pay a little bit of attention. As we wrap up, though, I want you to hear Matt Gaetz, who voted with Nancy Pelosi on the War Powers Resolution, even though he fully supports this president and the actions that the president took regarding Iran last week. And he was asked why he personally feels so strongly about these never-ending wars.
I live in the district that has more troops than any other in the United States Congress, and I see the impacts of these wars in the tearful hugs at airports, in the broken marriages, in the interrupted parenting, in the veteran suicide, in the drug abuse that happens. And these are our bravest patriots. These are the people that we uphold as having exemplified a love for our country that is unique in our nation. And so all of my life, I've seen how these wars impact people. And while I absolutely agree the president has Article 2 powers to go and kill a terrorist, to defend our troops, to take out someone who's trying to drag us into war, I do not believe that Article 2 would allow any president to drag us into a decades-long war. And what worries me is that, I mean, the Syria war started when Obama sent 40 guys. You know, the opening chapters of a forever war always include some nominal deployment, and then you got to have force protection around that, and then you got to have force protection around that. Then somebody kills an American, and all of a sudden you're spilling the blood of America's bravest.
And this, you know, is a real reminder here for me because my initial reaction to Gates's vote with Pelosi on war resolution was also, hey man, not now, not while we're in the midst of this thing, not while we have an election coming up in 11 months. But when someone actually has more than a soundbite, actually has some time to flesh out their thinking, it makes you start to change your mind. I certainly have changed my opinion on Matt Gaetz's decision in light of his explanations, and some of the texters to the studio seem to be taking on the same position. Gaetz was asked about President Trump and all of this sort of warmongering, as the left would say right now.
He told me that. I mean, you know, I was with the president. And I said, you know, I kind of joked with him down at Mar-a-Lago that, you know, Tucker Carlson and I had to advocate strong against some of those who wanted to avenge a robot with blood. And were we going to have to do the same thing again? And the president turned to me and said, Matt, I believe what you believe more than you believe it. And I love the president for that. I think that his instincts are right. I wish he would hire a few more people who agree with him.
Isn't President Trump really sort of showing how it's done when you have a well-funded, well-prepared military, how quickly they were able to mobilize and stop the attack on our embassy in Iraq last week, saved lives, the anti-Benghazi. And yet Donald Trump will continue to say, I want to bring everybody home, but we've got to be safe. We've got to be ready, and we've got to stop our enemies who wish to do us harm from having the mechanisms to rebuild, to train, to get dirty bombs or more ammunition, to raise money, everything else. And for Matt Gaetz, the way to do that, and we've heard from the president, seems to be his way as well, when he's not reacting to something that's happening right now, is through economic pressure.
And you know what makes that economic war successful? When we improve our country. If we'd have taken that $6-7 trillion and invested it in America, if we would ensure that the dollar is stronger, then it is a more effective tool in sanctions. But when we have to go and sell $1 trillion in bonds to fund the largesse of government so that we can have all these interventionist wars, then we make our country weaker, not stronger.
Use the tools that you have without sacrificing American soldiers unless and until there's a reason, then get in and get out. Now, I have a little different take on that. I'm not going to have time to get to it because there's so much going on in the Middle East, and we need our people present, at least at some level, intelligence, people that we trust to keep an eye on things so we don't have another 9/11. We don't have another growing and dangerous Al-Qaeda. Matt Gaetz, last couple of clips that we have with him, Trump's speech after the drone strike. What did he think about it?
I thought those remarks represented one of the high marks of the Trump presidency. I believe that he laid out the Trump doctrine in such an effective way. And my work to support the War Powers Resolution, I hope, was to reinforce the instincts that the president had that really, I think, culminated in those remarks.
Yeah, there's so much more audio. We're not going to get a chance to hear all of it for sure. But go to War Room Impeachment and listen to the entire interview yourself. One thing I want to make sure you at least get a taste of is Matt Gaetz commenting on why he and Jim Jordan and others apparently will not be present in the U.S. Senate impeachment trial when it begins now very soon against President Donald Trump.
I could tell you why. Republican senators are only going to be able to participate by passing notes to the Chief Justice. And Steve, you know as well as I do, those Republican senators do not want to see a bunch of House members over on the Senate floor doing our thing. I mean, that is just like inherent to the DNA of a senator is to have maybe
you
a different
think that's
view
what
of the lower
you
house.
You think is that's what's come down
I believe
to.
That you've had a number of Republicans in the Senate reach out to the president and advise him against having House members litigate this case on the floor. I think Pat is a great lawyer. I think that Jay not only is a great lawyer, but also is a very effective communicator. I think they'll do a great job. Obviously, Mark and Jim, Lee Zeldin, Andy Biggs and I, we're going to be helping in every way we can from a communication standpoint in the boiler room, going through evidence. But when it comes to the actual presentation of the case on the Senate floor, if it's your hope that House members are involved in that, I think you'll be disappointed.
Okay, that's why we're all so frustrated in general with Republicans, with many pleasant exceptions, but man, oh man. Hey, I love all the texters today who said, hey, I love hearing you not having to wake up early at 6 to do it. I appreciate if you were actually getting up early to listen, even though you didn't want to. But we're here now to stay 9 to noon, 710 KNUS. Don't forget Jimmy Sangenberger tonight. Dr. Matt Dunn, Backbone Radio tomorrow night. Of course, Peter Boyle is back here on Monday. Scott and Dave Minow are next with Bird Talk, one of the most popular shows here on 710 KNUS. I'm Randy Corcoran. Always remember, please never, ever forget, God loves you. So do I. See you at the rally at 1, the Tea Party next Tuesday. Have a great weekend.